that a lot of people like that who are more susceptible to believing conspiracy theories are imbibing or sort of getting drunk on the kinds of ideas and logic of something like superhero movies.
Aloha. Aloha, Terrell.
Aloha, Deidre.
And aloha to everyone out there, too.
Yes, aloha to you folks.
Because right now, we are about to dive into some pretty interesting topics.
One's relationships and hardships.
To one's childhood and trip down memory lane.
That's right. We are ready to talk it all.
So join us in our show,
DT Talks.
Aloha, everyone.
Aloha, friends and family. Welcome back to our new episode of our podcast, DT Talks Season 3. How are you doing, Deidre?
Oh yes. I am doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great so far. Can't complain. Beautiful
still
weather.
Still surviving there, huh?
Yeah, still surviving and kind of windy today and not too cold, but Aww. It's like a perfect weather.
At least over there, it's a nice kind of wind. Here, it's windy and it's blowing dust into people's houses. Sad days. But Terrell, have you been watching any movies lately while you're there?
Ooh, let's see. I think not particularly a movie, but more of like a series that I've been watching so far.
Oh, it's a series.
Yeah. It's called Kim's Convenience.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Course, wonderful series. I love it so much. Canadian American and man, so relatable somehow.
So it's more of a series
for me that I've been watching so far.
Well, for me, since that's all I pretty much do after work every day, watch movies. Well, the last one I watched was The Time Traveler's Wife. Just watching that.
Okay.
Have you seen it before?
No, I haven't heard of
it. Oh, really? Well, it came out years ago. It's a good movie. Maybe you'll be confused at first, but still good.
Fair enough. Maybe I'll go check it out. Might be a good, interesting movie for me. Hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, since, yes, we're talking about movies, that's basically what we're going to talk about for today's episode, right?
We're going to talk about that really, really soon. But before that, we'll go to the news. This is Uncle Taro back at it again with another news of goodnewsnetwork.org.
Welcome back, Uncle Taro.
Yes, and more good news from me, okay?
Oh, okay.
From the news here, it says, if anyone needs to stay positive, just validate their feelings, study says.
Okay.
Uncle Taro feel very, very positive today because Uncle Taro didn't receive the best parenthood when Uncle Taro was young.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't always say I love you or didn't say anything at all. But this article can help us to understand if we say good things to our friends, our family can help us de-stress.
Okay.
It says here, telling a distressed friend or family member something as simple as I understand why you feel that way can go a long way toward helping loved ones feel better, new research suggests. Very simple principle, very easy to understand. So the first sentence already mentioned everything. When researchers didn't show support or understanding for the anger participants were describing, the storyteller showed declines in positive emotions. But when the researchers validated what the participants were saying, their positive emotions were protected and stayed the same.
You can understand that, yeah.
So it's very important to always remember that people can feel with negative energy very, very easily. But it's also sometimes based on their upbringing. If you don't say, I love you enough in your family, then you'll not be able to feel the same way when you grow up. Maybe when you get older, when people say it more, you feel very, very weird because your mom and dad never said it to you. Do you feel the same way, Deidre?
Yes, I actually do. We don't vocally express that,
And then it continues saying, invalidating responses range from that doesn't sound like anger to why would that make you so angry? And so it always goes back to people not understanding what it feels like to be in that position.
What do you think about that though, Uncle Taro?
Oh, Uncle Taro feel very, very sad because I cannot hear I love you all the time. Because Aww. Uncle Taro's not married, don't have children, and only have niece and nephew.
Oh, but you got a lot of niece and nephew who love you.
They never say that to me. They always come to me and wants gift or money off of me only. Nothing more than that.
Maybe that's how they show their love.
By taking my money, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, one thing that I want you to learn, friends and family, is that always remember to ask and tell your friends and family that you love them and that you care about them. And most importantly, always say, I understand how you feel. Even though you have never been in that position, but always know that you understand what it feels like, even though you don't know what it feels like.
Hopefully that doesn't backfire, but yeah.
That is all the news from Uncle Terrell. Take it away, Deidre.
Okay, well, that was some really good positive vibes from Uncle Terrell. So now let's get into our episode. In our last season, if you guys have tuned in to DT Talks, we actually invited one of our favorite professors, Professor Jurgensen, who was our guest for the podcast. So we thought, why not this time? Let's invite another one of our favorite professors.
Well, the reason why we picked this specific our wonderful friend here is that, well, one is because it's my major and it would be nice to have someone to talk about this particular topic, and it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And he also have taught Deidre before. And well, how do you feel about that, Deidre, knowing that?
How do I feel? I mean, I feel great. Kind of reminds me back a little of being in class, like, okay, I'm kind of scared, but nah, it's all good.
Well, without further ado, we'll have him introduce himself. Take it away.
Hi, so I'm Dr. or just Mason Allred. Great to be here on the show with you. That's true. I do know both Terrell and Deidre already from class. They're both outstanding students. Very smart.
Thank you.
So happy to be here. Happy to talk with you.
He's just saying that we're really outstanding because, yeah, it's on the podcast.
No, I have grades to back that up.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Now we know. So how should we address to you? Should we call you professor, or should we call you by your first name? Or
I'm happy with just first name. You can just call me Mason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll call you Mason in this episode.
So how are you feeling, Mason?
I feel great. It's a beautiful day here. Doing good. Went surfing this morning with my wife and saw the president of the university out there surfing with me. It was a wonderful morning.
Oh, snap.
I'm feeling good.
How do you feel from that? Like,
oh, it's the best way to start the day, to get out there in the water and wake up and catch some waves.
Wow. What a great day to start. But it was raining, though, this morning.
It did rain for a bit. It's true. Still fun.
Still fun.
We do live in a place where it doesn't get too cold, even when it rains. So
True. Good.
Yeah. I was playing soccer earlier, but it was like raining and not raining and raining and not raining. Mm. So
all that sounds so refreshing, though.
Yeah, but it's like humid rain, too, in the mornings. It was weird. I don't know about surfing, but I know when I was playing, I was sweating. And when it was raining, I was still sweating.
It's okay. It's good to sweat. So, of course, our listeners are familiar with this next segment where we get to know our guest a little bit better. And what we're going to do now, Mason, we're going to do Would You Rather questions.
Okay, let's do this.
All right, here we go. First question of Would You Rather. Would you rather stay at home or head out on your day off?
Head out. Yeah, definitely want to get out and do something.
Okay, so you don't like to just like stay at home and do nothing?
Oh, no, I can. I can definitely be a homebody and just chill around and watch movies for sure. But if it's a day off, I'll often want to take advantage of it and get out and do something early.
Okay. Makes sense. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Would you rather have staff meetings every day or get one break per year?
Ooh, I guess it depends on how long each are, but I do really value those breaks. So, and I don't mind hanging out with my colleagues. My colleagues are actually really cool. So I can do staff meetings every day if they're short.
How short as in how long?
Yeah, if it's under an hour, but I get to have several breaks throughout the year, I will take the staff meetings.
Okay. Yeah, that would be better too, because like you're working with your coworkers, and if you're familiar with them and you hang out with them all the time, then
yeah, they're
why
great.
Not?
I love being around them, so it's actually pretty energizing. A lot of those staff meetings, so I'm happy to attend them.
Interesting. All right, next question. Would you rather have 15 students who are the worst behaved in school, or teach a kindergarten class of 50 students?
That's a really tough one. I think the kindergarten class might be easier.
Okay.
But I'd like to believe that I could help turn the misbehaved college students. So I'm going to take that one. I'll take the poorly behaved college students and just try to turn them around if I can. Get them on my side to see if it works out.
What if they hate you, though?
Yeah, that might be horrible. That might be a horrible experience, but I'm willing to try it out.
Honestly, Mason, I don't think any students, or at least I know of, like, hates you. But, like, if there is, if I was a teacher, I don't feel good teaching at all. I don't feel motivated to do it because, one, they're not going to answer questions.
Oh, yeah. But how amazing would it feel if it does turn where you start to actually get to know each other and the class works? Oh, it'd be an amazing victory of coming together and respecting each other.
Okay, so would you rather counsel a student through a breakup or listen to a colleague describe an argument with their spouse?
Ooh.
wow.
I just think the first one's almost too potentially awkward. They both are awkward, but the first one is
more
just
awkward.
So difficult. Yeah.
Have you ever
had that, though?
It starts to
sound very sketchy. Not in the sense of, like, looking for counsel of what to do, but it's come up to let me know what's going on in their life, which is totally fine, but I'm not a counselor, so I would never want it to get to the point where it's, like, weird. So I'd probably take the second one. I'd probably try to help a colleague just because I feel like I have more experience with that as far as relationship that way and communication that way. And it just, the first one feels like it could get really awkward fast.
Yeah.
I'll take the second one.
That is true. All right. Second one it is.
Final question. Would you rather have a class that's too loud but still gets their work done, or have a class that is too quiet where nobody participates in discussion but gets the work done?
Oh, too loud for sure. As long as they're getting the work done, I would love the interaction. They can be loud as long as they're respectful. But yeah, getting the work done, coming together, being loud, that can actually be a really fantastic class environment. As long as there's respect there and people aren't talking over each other, that's excellent to be loud. I'll take that one for sure.
Yeah, because I've been to quiet classes before and it's very awkward when the professor asks a question and then nobody answers. And then I'm the kind of person who has the urge. I'm like, okay, no one's saying anything, I need to say something. That's usually me. And it gets super awkward if no one says anything, and I usually don't know what to do. And if I was a teacher, I'd be like, does that mean I have to say something now?
And that's often the default is the teacher will just keep talking and then you don't get any feedback from the students of where they're at or what they're thinking. So that's I don't like that.
Not at all.
I remember I've had that kind of experience because I did my internship teaching when the class is too quiet, and then I feel like, oh no, did I not teach well enough? And are they not understanding what I'm saying? Do you get that feeling then if it's too quiet?
Oh, for sure. I think that in the kind of modern pedagogy or the way of teaching, I think we've really learned to value interaction and to make sure that students are participating in their learning, that it's not all coming as a one-way street from a teacher. So when there's no interaction, I think we all immediately take that as a kind of negative sign that something's not working. Like, I didn't explain it well enough, I didn't set it up, or they disagree with me. And so it can happen, but it shouldn't ever happen as an extended period if the class environment has been set up correctly, where we know each other, we trust each other, there's that kind of a safe environment. So that's the only reason why it's so awkward to me, is it shouldn't have to be that way. You know, students should be able to say, I don't get it, what do you mean? Or can you repeat that? Or are you saying this? They should feel free to just speak up. And if they're not, then I do feel like something's wrong.
From my experience in his classes, none of us were ever really quiet, so...
Yeah. No, you guys were great. We spoke up. often we'll talk almost too much in my classes because I really value it and I really want students to learn from each other. And I love to interact and respond to students because here where I teach is just such a diverse population of students that you'd be completely missing one of the real hallmarks of this university if I didn't get that interaction. If it just came from my perspective, that's a poor class because there's so much richness in the different perspectives in the room.
Yes, true. I agree, yes.
That just shows how good of a professor he is.
Well, I do love my job. I'm not trying to say I'm good at it, but I do love my job. I love teaching fascinating things with really interesting and enthusiastic students, and I get a lot of that here.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks for answering all of our would you rather questions.
Did I pass?
Yep.
Maybe.
Almost. I was kidding.
All right. You did great. Thanks for that. That's definitely it, folks. We've gotten to know our professor, or Mason especially, a little bit better now, so it's pretty good.
Now that that's done, let's dig in deep to this topic for our episode, which is titled Movies versus Reality. Okay, so firstly for you guys, are you a big fan of movies in general?
Depending on what I'm watching. I've watched a lot of movies. The good ones and the really, really bad ones. And when I say bad ones, I don't just say the ones that's not PG-13 or like PG-13 or more.
Just poor production.
Yeah, just poor production. I'm like, what am I watching this? What am I paying money to watch this? It's first, it's not real. Second, it's, yeah, I don't like watching some movies. Yeah. What about you, Mason?
Oh, I love movies. I watch a lot. I studied film. A lot of my graduate work at UC Berkeley was in film and media studies. I wrote my dissertation on German film history. Ooh. So I spent a year in Germany on a grant, just going through the archives, watching old movies that no one was really watching. And I usually set a personal goal to try to watch at least one episode or movie a day, keep track of them. I take notes on movies I watch. Wow. So I love them. I watch all kinds of different stuff. I'm also picky though.
Okay.
So I keep trying to seek out the what I see as the best things. The short answer is love movies, have forever, love studying them and enjoying them.
Actually, can I imagine that? Like, you have to go through the archives and go through all those old movies.
Oh, that was the coolest experience.
Really?
That was literally my... So I was writing my dissertation. I was awarded this Fulbright grant where they paid me to work on my dissertation, paid me to do my research. So I took my wife and three kids with me. So I showed up to Berlin, Germany for a year, you know, and I'm on a student visa kind of situation, so I can't even work. So
yeah,
and I'm matriculated, but I don't have to take any classes or teach. So I'm really just doing research and writing all day and hanging out and playing. And so I would go to the archive. They would set me up in a room with my own projector. They'd get the film canister out and reel it up for me and let me just watch these old movies. And I would take notes and rewind them and pause them. It was just such a fantastic experience, just appreciating those old movies that most people don't care about, but I was just loving it. I mean, it was, I'll never forget the feeling of being in there and smelling the old film and seeing how great the quality was. You'd be amazed how great the quality is in some of these really good prints from like 1921, but they've been preserved really well. And when you see them projected as they should be, it's amazing quality. So yeah, I loved it. It just reminded me, solidified my love of cinema.
Nice. I like as you're describing it, I can picture it in my mind so well.
Yeah, same here. I was imagining, wow, like what it would be like in that position. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Putting things together, writing it down when you're like watching it. Wow.
Yep.
Would you feel like the ones that you watched in the archives, is it like similar to world experiences? Unless like the most of the films are like already about the world and all that.
So I would say from a genre standpoint, what kind of movies they were.
Yeah.
My project I was doing is I was looking at history films before Hitler. So this was Germany during the Weimar Republic. So in that sense, they are similar to things you'll see today, where they weren't too different as far as of their own time. They weren't documentaries. They weren't anything too experimental, too art house. They were actually just like epic history films, trying to like show off how big of a set and spectacles they could build. And we still have a lot of that. In fact, what they were doing then probably felt a lot like what we're doing now with superhero movies with CGI. It's just trying to blow everybody away with huge construction and destructions of cities and sets and so forth. It's just they were doing it as history. So it'd be like ancient Egypt or during the French Revolution, this kind of a thing. And I was really interested in how they were creating these to kind of, it was Germany basically after World War I when they had lost and they were decimated financially, basically trying to show the world like, look, we still have money. We're still doing amazing things. And culturally, we're really relevant. So they were making blockbuster movies and exporting them out to the rest of the world. So it's a fascinating moment before Hitler comes in and kind of ruins the whole thing. So in that sense, they do kind of relate to what we watch today. To some degree, as far as we're still into history films, we're still into spectacle and pageantry and costumes. I mean, Bridgerton is huge, right?
Oh, yes. So,
The Crown, people like period films still, and that's essentially what these were.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, from what I understand, though, and as Mason's describing all those, from taking classes from him as well in film, I feel this cinematic reality, it's just describing this world that's really grounded in reality and it pushes its limits. And I like how it was able to do that from way before an early cinema. And I like the way it exaggerates as well, because that's what keeps it exciting and engaging. Maybe that's why people like to go to movies in the first place, to get away from that rough time and reality in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think you're right. In fact, you could go even earlier. And oftentimes we try to simplify it as kind of two trends at the birth of cinema. And that is, one is the kind of reality like you're talking about, is like you can turn a camera on and film and you're just capturing reality. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what the Lumiere brothers were doing, where they would just film the train coming in that you've seen, right? Yeah. Or they'll just film people leaving the factory. And we would call those actualities because they're actually what's happening in real life, like documentary. But then on the other hand, we also have another filmmaker we all love, which was Georges Méliès, who is making trick movies with special effects. You know, like you've seen the clip from Trip to the Moon where that space shuttle goes into the moon's eyeball. He was making things disappear and reappear, you know, goblins and ghosts and magic tricks. And that's the other side of film that I think we all love. Like you said, it pushes the boundaries. It does things that can't happen in real life.
True.
So I think as audiences, we love both. We love it to feel like real and possible and to look like a lot of realism as we experience the real world. But at the same time, we don't really just want to watch our own life. We want to see drama and action and intrigue and suspense. And so cinema can offer both those. And they build off each other, right? Like we watch movies and we tend to imitate certain elements of them. But movies, as we just said, movies try to build a reality based on the reality we experience, no matter how subjective that may be for each of us. You have to consider the relationship between media and reality is kind of building off of each other. And I think we're always doing that. We're learning from the movies, but the movies are learning from us. And so it's not as simplistic as we might think.
One thing I want to bring up is that, going back to the reality kind of thing. So one of the movies I watched is Jojo Rabbit. Mm-hmm. Have you watched that?
Oh yeah, it's great.
I love that movie so much, and I'm so glad I watched it. And then like what builds off of that is that in that last year I watched a lot of movies, and I watched Selma. Mm-hmm. That one was, I cried in that movie. I also watched, what's it called? The one with Michael B. Jordan.
Is that Mercy? The old movie?
Yeah, Just Mercy, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh. I love those movies. I don't know why, maybe because like I can empathize with them. Maybe like certain movies can help you empathize more easily when you watch it. Or maybe because like you've never been in that situation before and that's why you feel more emotional. I think like some movies does drive you to certain realities that you've never seen it before. And it does make you feel different about yourself.
Yeah. In fact, exactly what Terrell's bringing up here, this idea of like learning empathy through film.
Yeah.
I subscribe to that so much and so deeply because I found it in my own life too. And that was a central argument of that first book I wrote off my dissertation. So I'm studying these history films in Germany. But the point is that I was arguing they weren't just making them to make money. Mm. A lot of the directors, if you read their notes and what they've published, they would actually say things like, by looking at other time periods and other parts of the world, we'll learn to love each other more.
Oh, wow.
And the idea was, if you watch movies outside of your own experience, like Terrell was just describing, like he would otherwise probably not know so much about Selma, about Martin Luther King, or about the kind of oppression that African Americans faced in this country. It's important to go out of your own experience and learn them. And for these directors after World War I, that was like their key mode to accomplish this, to think outside of their own box, their own perspective, to learn about others, to learn to love each other. And the biggest idea, because they just came out of World War I, was maybe this will help prevent a World War II.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So even like D.W. Griffith, like a huge name in film in America, he actually sailed to England and to Europe trying to meet with different historians and directors. And he wanted to make this huge history of the world film project. Mm. But his purpose, he said, was to try to prevent world war and to try to promote peace.
Wow.
And so this sounds really like lofty and this huge thing, but I agree. I think that if we do it right, films can help us understand and love each other better.
All right. Well, we've been really getting into this topic of movies and reality, but we're going to get first into our next segment of the podcast.
Yep. We're just going to listen to a few of our friends' recordings and to see what they have to say with movies versus reality. Here we go.
I love watching movies. Like when I was younger, I always, you know, I grew up on Disney and Pixar movies. Pixar movies were like my favorite because I remember Finding Nemo came out and somebody was like, wow, that animation is so good. And I was like, oh yeah, the water looks really cool. And so then I became interested in animation. But I really love the characters and everything, the stories. Even though cartoons are like looked on as like childish a lot of times, I don't know. It just really works for me to watch, you know, just a chill, a nice movie that like leaves you feeling good at the end. We've always had like normal stories like from books and things, that, and from stories being passed down, you know, like heroes and amazing seeing figures. And then when you compare that to reality, if it's just a story with words, then you can say, oh, this is just like what I imagined in my head. But if it's a movie, then it's hard to look at it and say, oh, this is going to look different, because the movies shown already said exactly how the hero looked, why this person is, why it appears so cool, which is fine because it's produced for entertainment. But I think there's definitely a danger to letting ourselves get like subconsciously start thinking reality should look like that. There's definitely advantages, like on the other side of that, of the same coin of books and stuff. Then with a movie, you see exactly how the producer wanted it to look, how the author, what they wanted you to see and feel, how they wanted, what they wanted you to hear and stuff. You can really reach out and give the exact feeling that you want to give your audience in a movie, because you control the tone, the word, sound, the picture, you know, the framing of everything. So I think as long as you keep in mind that it's somebody else's perspective that they're trying to give you, it can be very, just a great experience.
Hey everyone, this is your girl Savi, and she's here to answer a few questions. So, do I like watching movies? Yes. Why? Because they take me to places and make me see things that I've never seen or done before. And my family does that all the time. Why do you think movies set unrealistic expectations? Oh, it's because we think that that's the real situations in life, but really it's just the perspective of one person or a group. That's why I think movies set an unrealistic expectation. I'm always thinking one thing is supposed to happen this way, when really there's a lot of things that can happen. Are there any advantages to watching movies? There are a ton. You can learn heaps of lessons that you won't really learn by yourself. And so I think movies teach us a lot about empathy.
200%. I like watching movies because it's really fun. It's entertaining, stress relieving. Yeah, you name it. It's just totally fun. Second reason is that I learned a lot from movies, like how they're filmed or the grading, how it was edited, you know, stuff like that.
Do you think movies set unrealistic expectations? Yes, I think it does. You know, it's a movie, and don't get your head trapped in it or make your own life in comparison to a movie, because it's totally different. The movie is manipulated by directors and filmmakers and writers, and yours is quite different. Last question, do you think there are advantages to watching movies? Oh yeah, totally. You can learn history, you can learn about psychology or science. There's just a lot of things that you can learn from movies, but you just gotta be aware, you know, because some of it might not be true and some might be true, depending on the opinion of whoever director is. But yeah, totally. There's really a huge advantage of watching movies.
I do not dislike movies. I actually know several movies that deserve substantial commendation, but personally I prefer to watch dramas or series. It might set an unrealistic expectation, but I think it is always best to be aware of setting unrealistic expectation in our personal relationship with others. I notice that Hollywood movies always try to portray the importance of like finding the one, your destiny. This makes us think that if a person is truly meant for us, it would all just work out. And we all know real life is not like that. Even though when someone is worth it and perfect for you, a relationship is still hard work. One thing that kind of bothers me is how they start romanticizing mental illness. If the movie shows a realistic treatment and hard work, it won't be as interesting, I understand. But like several movies with mental health topics always use romance as the main cause for the character to receive, quote, enlightenment, so they are inspired to seek help or to get treatments, to recover, to get better. I mean, yes, having a social support can be one of the sources of help, but like having a boyfriend or girlfriend will not be the main thing or the only thing that will make you get better. Do you think there are advantages to watching movies? Yes, for sure. For some, it is one of the best methods of self-care to bond with their loved ones. And sometimes, you know, some movies give you encouragement and inspiration, especially like the scenes of those who are resilient, who work hard in achieving their dreams or goals.
I personally enjoy watching movies because it is a great stress reliever and a fun way to spend my free time. Movies set unrealistic expectations because I feel they want to attract more viewers and more fans, since people tend to be drawn to things that they can't have. Movies usually portray some scenes or plots that are too good to be true. Some advantages to watching movies, I would say a great stress reliever and also as an inspiration because you might be able to relate to a plot or a character. I've also seen videos of medical students sharing that they wanted to become doctors because they watched Grey's Anatomy and they felt inspired by that series, I guess.
Those are very interesting comments, like, if you think about it, because, like, they vary from, like, one perspective of saying, like, oh, like, I like it because, like, I didn't have this kind of experience before, and then the other is just saying, like, well, I just love watching it because there's drama. Pretty interesting, I feel like. What do you think, Deidre?
It was interesting for sure. I like the first one where he compares it to like a book as well, which is true. Like as you're reading a book, here's what the author is saying, what it wants you to understand. And then the same can be in movies. And then there's also one of the clips who mentioned about romanticizing mental health. So that's actually also a good point. But yeah, Mason, what do you think of those audio clips?
I think it's really encouraging because you hear them talk about it and it's not in the most simplistic terms. They're really thinking about their movie watching, not just doing it mindlessly. So again, that's encouraging. I noticed several of them make this move where they go from, I love movies because they make me feel good, they inspire me, the kind of mood management, or in comp studies, the kind of uses and gratifications, like why audience seek out particular types of media. Oftentimes it's to make them feel better. Like if you want to laugh, you try to watch a comedy deliberately so that you'll be happy and laugh. There's nothing wrong with that. Most of what we do is based on those kinds of urges. Like, I want to be happy, so let's watch a comedy. Or I want to have fun and get scared with my friends, let's watch a horror movie. That's fine. But the next step where several of them went was then thinking about, okay, but it's always also a construction from a director and all these other participants where it's their view, it's their perspective. And that's the level we have to get at if we really want to be very media literate audiences. And I think when you get to that level, you're able to watch a lot more different stuff and take lessons away from it because you're watching on that level. So even a movie that's bad, like Terrell admitted he watches some bad movies, they're just not well done. Sometimes there's still a lot to learn from those in recognizing what makes it so bad. And I don't just mean technically. Sometimes a movie's really bad because it's kind of like culturally tone deaf, like it's racist or it's sexist.
Yep.
And so you watch it, you just feel like cringy, like, oh, wow, how do they not understand how bad this sounds, how offensive it is? And so you can learn from it by, as a kind of negative example, almost like, wow, I want to make sure I don't act like that in my life. So when we're watching on the level that some of these people commented on towards the end of their comments, I think that's really constructive to recognize just how much of a construction a film really is.
Yeah, no, I'm not calling out names, but James Franco, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I really don't like most of the movies that you're producing.
He's not calling out names, but he did.
But I'm sure he's a good person. It's just not the movies he's directing. So don't search what he did.
Well, that's the thing is anybody creating a piece of artwork brings their own experience and perspective, which is wonderful, but also means they'll bring their own blind spots and weaknesses.
Yes.
And so that's why it's important we watch different people's stuff and we try not to be immediately too judgmental, but we do need to be kind of discerning, try to look for what's good and true and beautiful and why.
True.
And so that's why some of the best movies are really sad or really disturbing sometimes, but you learn through that. So sometimes they really want you to feel horrible, but it's because you need to feel that to understand how bad it was for Martin Luther King.
True,
or to feel how bad it was in this different instance, something you would otherwise never experience. So you better feel horrible about it, or else you're not getting it, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So I'm just saying there's power to fun, happy, inspiring movies, but there's a lot of power to movies that will push us and make us feel discomfort and open up our minds and hearts in ways we maybe didn't expect.
I definitely agree that, because when I was still in school and I was taking Mason's class for film class, I remember he would make us watch different movies each week. That was something I've never done before, where he made us watch different kinds of genres from different times. And because of that, I never realized I would actually enjoy black and white movie because only after like actually trying it out, watching class and having him tell us to really dig deep and try to understand how this movie was made or the shots or even like the message and stuff. That was definitely something I really appreciated. And I learned to appreciate movies, films more after actually trying to really look into it.
So Deidre, what's your favorite then from Mason's class?
The favorite movie?
A favorite movie, sorry. I didn't complete my sentence.
What film still sticks out to you, still think about? Is there a film that had a lasting effect, a favorite one?
Yes. So there was some that I remember you showed us that was good. Like, I remember you asked the class who enjoyed it, and of course we all like vote and such. Some of the ones that I didn't like, I still really appreciated and appreciated how it was shot and such. But the one that I like most was this black and white movie. I forgot the title. Was it the song of
Sunrise, Song of Sunrise. Two Humans?
Yes, Sunrise. That's the one that I love. That one, I don't know why, it really stood out to me and I appreciate it so much, and especially during that time period itself when it was shot.
Cool. Yeah. I haven't watched that movie, so I don't know what's that about. But I did.
You should try it.
Well, maybe I should. Yeah,
you should. My kids even love that. It's a beautiful silent movie. Silent. Yeah. Black and white.
Okay.
But it's very. I think it works universally. It's quite well done.
Oh, now I want to watch it. But I did take a film class last semester with Dr. Buse, and one movie that stood out to me the most, and I don't know why, but I resonate with the Asian Americans a lot. For some reason, I watched The Farewell. That's wonderful movie. Makes me feel so relatable, because like I can like speak the language properly. At the same time, like culturally, it's so similar, and communicating wise with your loved ones, especially the grandma as well, like feel so attached. And now I feel so I can relate to it so easily. So that's one of the movies I watched, and I really really liked last year. You know what's funny? Like last year, I just watched all the movies that's like happens in reality, and somehow I can relate to it, and it feels more real for some reason than like watching superhero movies. And maybe Godzilla and Kong are coming out in a few weeks. So for some reason, I resonate more on kind of reality films, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but you also bring up another really important point. Like, I've been pushing this idea that you need to watch movies from different types of people, different world experiences, different socioeconomic backgrounds, everything. But it's also important to have the experience you just described with The Farewell, where it's like relatable in the sense of, I know that. I feel like that's part of me on the screen. Mm-hmm. So as much as we want to seek out difference, it's also important, on the other hand, to have representation of difference so that we all feel like a piece of all of us shows up on the screen sooner or later. Not every movie, but you want that difference and that relationality where there's some similarity. So it's really important that we have different actors, different directors, different writers from all over the world, all kinds of different backgrounds, so that everyone feels like you did watching The Farewell.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'd actually like to ask a question, Mason. Mm-hmm. Do you think, though, that movies create unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, I think they traffic in unrealistic expectations because it's so marketable. People love it. Yeah. I mean, the fact is, you're giving people what they want, even if it's bad for them. They may know that cigarettes are horrible for their lungs, but they may love them and want them. Ooh. So I think not the very best are doing this, but a lot of sort of mainstream, especially Hollywood, movies made with the business model of making as much money as possible, often traffic in this just because it works so well. And that can be really problematic. And I think it spins out even into end users doing this and picking it up and reflecting it in like social media and so forth, where it's not just because Cardi B looks so great in this movie, it's also because of the way followers are trying to mimic her or anyone else on their social media accounts and the way they act or dress or push different things through TikTok or Instagram. So you have a kind of double, triple effect of this happening. So I wouldn't just blame the movies, but certainly they can set some unrealistic expectations, especially if you watch them like that, which is the problem. Don't do that. If you watch them with the sense of like, I'm trying to learn how to be, or I'm trying to learn how to attract people or how to get rich, that's really problematic. Oftentimes a film is trying to teach you that what they're showing you is bad, even though it looks good, and you're not catching the underlying message. So it may be a movie about someone getting rich and making tons of money, but the movie's actually trying to say that what they're doing is really sleazy and bad. But if you watch it in a simplistic way, you're like, oh, that's so cool. They just got so rich. I want to be like that. So we don't want to be those simplistic audience members. That's why we need to get very, again, media literate, very conscious about what we're watching, have a kind of active mind while you do it, because then it frees you up to make better sense of it and apply it in your life in much more helpful ways.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I remember when I was younger, there would be certain movies that I've watched. I remember as a child, I enjoyed it so much. And then as I got older and I rewatched those movies, and I'm like, what is this? Why did I enjoy this? Why? It's giving this message. Why did I enjoy it as a child?
Yeah, you pick up on different things later in your life than maybe you did as a child, for sure. But that's that maturation project of becoming a more mature viewer, is that mm-hmm. the movies we grew up with weren't as great or as woke as we wish they were, right?
Exactly, yeah. I agree with the same thing with what Deidre said. Like, growing up, I watched a lot of, so to speak, violent movies. Because, like, for some reason, I enjoy watching people beating up each other.
Yeah.
And then also, like, yeah, but now it's so different. And when I watch certain movies, I don't get the excitement anymore. Maybe because I grew up and, like, don't find that particular thing that I enjoy anymore. But superhero-wise, like, it's so different. Like, they're beating up each other also. Yet I enjoy watching that more than reality. Maybe because I know it's, like, super violent for myself and I don't want to get involved with that. But it's like, oh, it's superheroes. It's fake, so it's fine. So it creates that perception of it. And it's very, very interesting that movies do that.
Well, that's important, but it's also tricky because there are always, as we say, like, cues in movies that let you know when violence is okay or not okay. Okay, hopefully, if you have a good moral director. And I like the quote that Stuart Hall says, which is that every scene of violence is also always a message about violence. So it's not enough to just say this movie is really violent or this movie has no violence. It's really the way that they treat it and the way it's done. And so I'm not going to get into specific movies here, but it can be done in ways that I think are sometimes really appropriately disturbing. Wow, I wish I wouldn't have seen that. That's graphic and ugly. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. Hopefully you feel how ugly that is, because hurting someone like that or killing someone should feel that ugly in your gut right now. Like, you should want to puke, because that's a horrible thing that people do to each other. On the other hand, sometimes we play with it, like you're saying, with a lot of cartoons for kids, but then also like superhero movies, where violence becomes something fun. And that is problematic, but they try to get around it by doing things where it's like, what they're beating up or killing is clearly evil, so they'll go out of their way to show you how bad this person is. Let's not try to understand them. They're just bad. Or they'll turn them into aliens, robots, or monsters, because then you're dehumanizing them. And we don't want to feel for them. We don't want to have sympathy for them, because then it's easier to kill them and easier for our audiences to enjoy it. So that's why, like, the Ninja Turtles with the foot soldiers...
Yep.
They used to be humans, but then eventually they become like robots in the newer cartoons, because it's easier for parents and kids to say, well, they're just robots. It's okay to cut their head off. So it's important to think about the messages around violence, right? Violence is horrible, and we need to think about how it's used in a movie, because we don't want to watch movies and become violent people. But you could actually, I'm saying that studies even show with media literacy, if you're thinking about it and deliberately acting in certain ways, you could see a violent movie and not be violent. Because that's actually a choice you make.
Yeah.
And different viewers are on different levels. And so you have to think about that too. Age, background, mental health, all of these things. But I'm just speaking very generally. If you're able to dissect the movie, think about what it's doing, how it's doing it, and then actively choose how you'll respond, you have a lot more power. You're not just a passive audience who's now said, now you have to be violent because the Joker was violent. It's much more complex if we're smart about it.
When you mentioned robots, I just kept thinking of Bicentennial Man because I just watched that the other day.
Oh, is that with Robin Williams?
Okay. That's cool.
So I was like, I feel for the robot.
Robots are such a great figure, and I mean that as like a metaphor, to think about what makes us human and where's that threshold of the kind of uncanny valley of like how you can tell if something's AI or really alive. Sure, Bicentennial Man, but especially even like the Westworld series on HBO. Wow. Blow your mind about thinking about data collection, the internet, about what makes us human, where that stops and begins. Yeah, I think robots are really productive. We've historically treated them like they were an other, like they're not human. We should not worry about them. But increasingly, you have Alexa in your home. You talk to Siri.
Oh,
you have AI and algorithms all around you. Eventually, certainly, we're going to have to get to the point where we have rights for robots.
Robots.
And we have to love them and care for them as our brothers and sisters, probably.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh.
what a time to live if that happens. When that happens, of course. Do you think that people get caught up in movies? For example, they say they don't watch too much of action movies or you'll end up becoming really violent as a person. I know you already answered that in particularly, but like, do you feel like people get caught up? Like, let's say they watch a superhero movie. Okay, next day, I'm going to be Spider-Man already or something like that.
For kids, yeah.
Yeah, I see. I think it's easy to point the finger and do this third person effect thing where it's like, I don't do that, but certainly other people do who are not very smart. And I don't know how true it is. It depends on how deeply we mean they get caught up. Certainly it has an effect. Mm-hmm. And so I like to show even, for instance, like, you know, if you grew up watching Disney princess movies, it's easy for all of us to say, oh, they're so silly. No one acts like that. But then when you watch how, for instance, men and women act on like The Bachelor, The Bachelorette.
And that's
fake to a degree, right? They're acting something out. But they're also certainly acting out a very princess, prince type of scenario they've seen on these movies, sometimes literally wearing the dress and showing up like he's Prince Charming. You do see it happen right before your eyes. There is a danger, I think, to stretch this a little bit. So if you grow up watching tons of superhero movies right now, they're fun, they're great. But if you extend that logic too far, if you're kind of too caught up in them, I think the dark side is something like, I would connect it this far. I would say even like people across the world, but especially right now in the United States, believing in like conspiracy theories and like the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, these people who are into like QAnon and all this kind of crazy stuff, part of what they've done, to my mind, is they've taken a kind of superhero type of mindset where there's big villains out there and big heroes out there. And so there's these bad guys with this underground cabal and they're drinking baby's blood. And they've made this story up in their mind that's a huge, like a movie. It's like an epic superhero movie. And what happens in superhero movies, what they are by definition, is they're vigilantes. Yep. They're not actually cops. They're outside of the law. And that's always problematic. Yeah. But they think they're justified because the world needs them. Mm-hmm. So they have to do something extra legal that is a little bit illegal, but it's helpful. And what did those people do on January 6th? They thought they were the superheroes showing up, breaking the law, but for the good of the country, because they believe in this really big kind of mythic tale, this conspiracy. I would go so far as to say, it's my guess, that a lot of people like that who are more susceptible to believing conspiracy theories are imbibing or sort of getting drunk on the kinds of ideas and logic of something like superhero movies that seems so harmless. They're just harmless, fun family entertainment. But I do think if you get too caught up, it can be dangerous if you don't notice some of the lessons to be learned there.
Wow.
Yes.
Like I've never thought about that, but once you mentioned it, I'm like, you know what? It kind of makes sense. Like the reason why most people like act in a certain way is because of what they watch. Ooh.
And without realizing it.
Exactly,
Yes.
The people who would realize it probably wouldn't do it. Or they'd say, I'm deliberately wearing this leather jacket because I like how it looked on James Dean. So I'm deliberately doing this. That's just someone who's like cognizant of it. Mm-hmm. But most people aren't even thinking about it. They're just already, without thinking like, oh, I'm going to buy McDonald's now too because I just saw that hamburger in there. Oh. You know what I mean? So that subliminal kind of marketing and kind of reality versus movies is always happening.
And I'm sure like...
Yeah.
I'm sure like movies are very, very harmless to a certain degree. But I think it does comes down to how the person takes it.
Yes.
Takes it in and how what they're going to do with it after they get the information.
Certainly, because one of the things that bothers me the most about... I love superhero movies. I grew up reading comic books. So I watch them with my kids sometimes too. But what bothers me the most about like an Avengers movie, aside from it not being great cinema oftentimes, is the amount of product placement. It's so clearly sponsored by all these different products.
Exactly, and I'm like,
I just hate putting my kid in front of that. It's like watching a YouTube video with 5 ads. That is already not just trying to get you to buy Chevy or Audi or something, but it's teaching you a certain thing about wanting to buy in general, wanting to have that nice car, needing to have that new phone. And that kind of consumerist mindset, I don't want to film like secretly or covertly pushing that on my kids. So actually that bothers me sometimes even more than some of the plot elements or the violence or something.
Lastly, we'd like to know if you think movies or cinemas play an important role in our life.
Absolutely. I think they can and I think they should. I think they're a modern medium, right? They're not that old, actually. They're only about 125 years old.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they're still fairly young and they've already even mutated and changed. But I think if we watch them correctly, they're hugely beneficial. I really like the way that Wayne Booth was a literary critic at University of Chicago. And a few decades ago, he wrote this book called The Company We Keep, like keeping company with friends. And he thought about books as like friends, the kind of friends you have. Mm-hmm. And he would say that some are like useful, like networking. It's good to be friends with them, but it's not that deep. And some are pleasant because it feels good to be around them. They're fun. But then there are those that are self-justifying, which means you both actually benefit from each other in a deeper sense. Mm-hmm. And so you can have all kinds of films, some that are just like, yeah, you should watch that or know that because everybody's talking about it. And there's some that are pleasant, where it's like a friend where it just makes you feel happy to watch that comedy, or you just want to sit down and watch a superhero movie, fine. But I think if we seek out self-justifying movies, those that will push us out of our comfort zone, enlighten us to think and feel things we never would have otherwise, they justify themselves. They're ethical because they teach us how to be better human beings. They inspire us to be better human beings. And again, I'll stress this, that doesn't mean they always show you the perfect example. That that is nice and easy, but sometimes they're more complicated, where getting the really great lesson out of it is on you to discern it and to see how you make sense of this. But I would say if you're able to do that, if you learn the capacity of actively viewing like that, absolutely films can be beneficial and teach you so much you would otherwise not learn in a very affective, a very emotional, involving kind of way. Yeah.
It's true, because like, even for me, my family and I, we grew up always watching movies. That's something we did. We bonded over by watching movies. And because of movies, I actually got a better understanding of what the world is outside before I actually went out and traveled. In a way, it sort of like prepared me, like, oh, this is what this culture is like. For example, in the States, these are how people usually tend to act and such, so this is how they are. And then when I actually get to the States, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see how some of it's like in the movies. Okay.
Yeah, and even when they're, as we've said, unrealistic or exaggerated, you're still learning. Yes. You're still learning someone's perspective on that experience or that part of the world. So I think about the whole last year when we were all locked down, sitting around our homes. One of the key ways to have a kind of prosthetic mobility, like a way of traveling without being able to travel, kind of like a proxy travel, was by watching movies.
Exactly.
If you do it in a smart way, it's like you're still meeting people, making new friends as movies, and traveling the world if you're watching the right kinds of movies in the right kinds of ways.
Yeah, one thing I want to bring up is that movies, I mean, we're getting into that like tiny topic already, is that brings people together, brings family together. And then like if if the movie's really bad, you critique together how bad it is.
Yes.
And it brings a same kind of energy in that particular sense of watching a specific movie. I think it's pretty cool. It's beneficial for many ways, family, your own, and maybe even outwardly somehow.
I have a question for both of you guys.
Oh, okay.
What's your guilty pleasure movie?
Okay, if there's one thing that I love watching, and I think I already watched this movie more than The Avengers, Infinity War, is that I watch Crazy Rich Asians.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Crazy Rich Asians is one of the only movies I watch 4 times.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's, again, like, it goes back to being relatable, like, based on my country. Well, the locations are based on my country.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know, it's all Malaysia.
Yeah, and the actor is Malaysian, and then there's the culture and just their life. It's very relatable. That's why I say, like, yeah, sure, guilty pleasure right there.
Yeah, that is a fun one. I even like the soundtrack and the look on that one.
Yes.
It's fun, it's fun, but it just looks amazing. It makes you just want to go to Singapore.
Yes.
Guilty even though it's technically Malaysia.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, I had it in quotes. You can't see. But I put that in scare quotes. For me, it's interesting. I'm old enough now. I'm about to turn 40 in a couple weeks. And so that's old for me. So I get a little bit nostalgic. So for me, a guilty pleasure is often watching something from my childhood. And I can watch those with new eyes and be very critical, but I also sometimes try to watch them just to enjoy them. And seriously, this means that like sometimes I just want to watch like the Ninja Turtles movie from 1990 or like the old Batman movie from 1989, the Tim Burton one that I saw in theaters and just fell in love and had everything Batman in my house. So sometimes I like to go back in time or like Back to the Future. I love Back to the Future.
That's classic.
1, 2, 3.
All of them, but yeah, especially 1. So for me, those are often guilty pleasures. I also, I'm very picky, as I said, but sometimes I still enjoy watching these pretty bad movies with my kids just because it's a way to connect. So I don't really think to All the Boys I've Loved Before, 1, 2, and 3 are good movies, but I love watching them with my daughters because they like them. So sometimes I enjoy doing that.
Very interesting. Well, now you know, like, what's the best kind of bad movie? Now, just kidding.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm like, I'm trying to picture watching that. My dad, I'm like, that's okay. I'll just stick to watching Indian movies with him and Filipino movies with my mom.
Hey, well, it's like Terrell said, though, sometimes those conversations out of movies with kids is a way of modeling and teaching them how to actively watch.
Yeah.
So sometimes it does come up. Sometimes I watch a movie with my kids and it's an awkward scene or someone does something stupid, and sometimes we'll actually like make a comment to clearly critique it together or make fun of it together or even just talk like, you would never do something like that, right?
Right.
I mean, you should do the same thing if you're watching The Bachelorette or The Bachelor 2, just because you're basically sitting there making fun of people, which is kind of a sad thing to be doing, but you want to make sure you're not wanting to emulate them. So
That reminds me, I've been watching a lot of Gogglebox. I don't know if you guys heard of Gogglebox
No.
before. Oh, so Gogglebox is actually, I think it started in the UK where they just have people, regular people, watch movies and they just react to them. So we're watching the people react to movies as they're watching it, like different families. Mm. And it's very interesting because like sometimes I enjoy watching the people's reaction more than watching the movie itself.
Mm. So,
yeah, so I don't know.
Would you say that that's your guilty pleasure?
As of now, yeah, that's what I watch every night.
Okay. Oh, every night. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's yeah. a guilty pleasure.
Yes. It's actually very interesting. Yeah, because like they have it in the UK, the Australian Gogglebox, the UK Gogglebox, just people from Australia, UK. I don't know if they have one in the States, but yeah, I don't know if you guys would check it out and see Gogglebox. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. To the ones who wants to watch it.
not promoting, not sponsored, not promoting. Guys.
Yep, exactly. But if you want to watch it, as Deidre suggests, watch it. Yeah. And also Mason and I, me's suggestion on the movies as well. So if you want to watch it, go watch it. Gives a positive output, hopefully. If not, it'll be a good way to spend time with your friends and family for watching those kind of movies.
Well, yes. So since we've run out of time, so sad, we've had really, really good discussions, especially Mason. I just feel movies in general, films, I love them. The combination of images, music, dialogue, lighting, sound effect, all of that, it creates deep feelings. And I think it will help us better understand not only our lives, but how society and cultures operate itself through movies. What do you think, Terrell?
Amen. Right there. On the dot, period.
Done.
Confirmed, hashtag, sealed, signed. Yes.
Delivered.
Yes. Well, I definitely agree with everything that you said, so it's on point. Well, again, it's the end of the podcast, and I'd like to say thank you to Mason for being our guest here today, and hopefully he'll be able to answer. Yeah, much mahalo indeed.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great.
Any last words or advice in movies or in general that you want to tell to our audience today?
Just like I said, keep picking out of the best movies to help direct your life. So make the best friends. As I said, these movies are kind of like friends. You don't have to always agree with them. You don't always have to even relate with them, but try to learn from them and be enriched by them if we watch them in kind of deliberate, active ways. It's hard for me to describe how much I love movies, and it's a kind of weird, voracious thing where the more you watch, the more you want to keep watching even more. It just builds on itself. But I find if we do it in a way to learn from it, it's just so beneficial. Movies for the last 125 years are kind of an arc of humanity. The best of us, the worst of us, but certainly our dreams and our fantasies. And if you approach them like that, imperfect constructions of humans, you'll understand those humans around you even better. So your engagements with film should improve your engagements and contact and interactions with those around you.
Awesome.
Amen.
Right there. Well, once again, thank you so much, Mason, for that advice and many more that you commented as well. And as well, Deidre, for giving us some great insights as well from your
guilty pleasure. And for Terrell, of course.
Up, okay, thank you so much. Well, once again, friends and family, thank you so much for tuning in to our DT Talks podcast season 3. We hope you enjoyed what we have talked about here today, especially about movies. What's your favorite movie? You can be sure to let us know in the comments down below and just, you know, just let us know. Be sure to, again, follow us on our social media platforms on Facebook, Buzzsprout, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music as well. So thank you so much for listening. And this has been
DT Talks. Woo! It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.